This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game. Now, how do you stop the office grouch ruining your day? How do you enjoy a holiday without obsessing over your inbox? Sounds like me. Should you accept your colleague's request to follow you on Instagram? Now, the modern workplace can be emotional minefield filled with confusing power structures and unwritten rules. We're expected to be authentic, but not too authentic. Professional, but not stiff. Friendly, but not an oversharer. I'm talking about the book here, No Hard Feelings, Emotions at Work. And this is written by Liz Fosslien and Molly West Duffy. Thanks for taking time to speak to us. I had to read the book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Very real life situations. But I think very interestingly as well, your co-author, Liz, you're both of different personalities. Now, how do you both get together to write this book?
Yeah, so I met Molly when I moved to New York City. So I was living on the other coast in California. And when I moved, I didn't really know that many people. So I asked my friends to set me up on friend dates with their friends in New York. And Molly was the first person that I went out to dinner with. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of immediately got along. We do have differences, but we're also pretty similar. We're both introverts. We both love taking on side projects. We both have very intense sleep rituals to go to sleep at night. So we just became close friends through that.
Okay. Now, when you went through this book, right, what inspired you to both write this book?
Yeah, so we both had similar experiences early in our careers where we didn't think that we could have any feelings at work. And so that meant that anytime we were anxious or depressed or even excited, we would just suppress those emotions. Mm-hmm. And doing that for so long actually ended up resulting in physical issues for both of us. So I started getting horrible headaches. Molly actually got numbness in her forehead because she was holding so much tension in her neck and shoulders. And so given that our physical issues, we realized that it's impossible to not have feelings. And so there have to be better ways to deal with them, to talk about them, to kind of treat yourself with more care.
Right. You know, I just recently experienced this coughs that last for a longest time. Mm. And I think it manifests as well, right, in terms of your health when you're when you don't put emotion into your work.
Yeah, there's so many stories I hear of people who just are very stressed, and then you turn in a final project or you come home from a trip, and that's when you get sick. And it's just because you've been going and not really taking enough time to like give yourself a break and even process all the emotions that are happening within you.
Right. You know, I'm just looking at one of the chapters, which is about motivation. And I guess sometimes when you've been in a role for a long time or been in a company for a long time, how do you continue to find the motivation? How do you continue to have meaning in your work?
Yeah, so two main ways. And the best one is just to keep in mind the people that your work affects. So it's really easy to just see your emails, or if you're working with spreadsheets, to just start to stare into the spreadsheet and see nothing else. But if you continue to remind yourself, my work is actually having a positive impact on the world, and if you can even better meet one of your company's customers or hear a story about how your company's work is changing their lives, that can be really meaningful and really motivational. So just finding meaning in your job is one great way. And the other way is just to keep learning new things. So even if you've been at work for a while, there's probably new people starting, so you can learn about them. You can also set up time with a colleague to do a skills swap. And so that's you set up an hour, and for half an hour, you teach them something that you know really well. And for the next half hour, they teach you something they know really well. So that's another way of acquiring new skills, which will make you better at your job, but also make you more interested in it. And so the better we are at something, the more motivated we are to do it.
You know, when you set out to write this book, I guess, you know, who did you have in mind? Was it, you know, I guess people who have been working for a while and not so much someone entering the workforce?
Yeah, I think a lot of people assume that because the book is illustrated that it's meant for a younger audience, but it's really for anyone. and that, you know, emotions are not something that only young people have. They're not something only old people have or older people. And so the book is just really intended for whether you're an individual contributor, a manager, or a leader. We give specific tips to each of those people. So individual contributor might be a little earlier in your career. Manager, there's a lot that you can do as a manager. Your emotions impact your team more profoundly than if you're just a report. And the leaders obviously can do a lot to create belonging and build trust in the entire organization.
Mm. Now, I'm reading about decision-making, and you talked about relevant emotions and irrelevant emotions. What are these two?
Yeah, so relevant emotions have to do with the decision at hand. So let's say that you're thinking about taking a new job, and you think about not taking that job, and that fills you with regret. That's an emotion that's being caused by the decision, and it's important to listen to it and at least factor it into your decision-making process. An irrelevant emotion is one that has absolutely nothing to do with the decision, but it's still trying to stick its tentacle into your decision-making process. So, for example, if I'm stuck in traffic for 2 hours, I'm going to be in a really bad mood. And when I come to the office, research shows that because I'm angry and frustrated, I might suddenly start to see my colleagues' ideas as bad and get angry at them, even though their ideas might not be bad at all. It's just the fact that I sat in traffic that's influencing how I see the world. And so it's really important when you're making a decision, write down everything you're feeling and figure out, is this emotion tied to the decision, or is it because of something completely irrelevant and then I need to get rid of it and not factor it into my process?
Right. So under relevant emotions, there's anticipation, anxiety, regret, and envy, right? Let's just talk about anticipation. When you've got anticipation, what is it trying to tell you?
Yeah, so if the idea of, so for example, when I was thinking about whether I wanted to move to New York City, which is where I met Molly, the idea of moving really filled me with excitement. And so I could envision myself in this new city, you know, having kind of a new life, meeting new friends, and that seemed delightful. And so that was an important emotion to listen to. So anticipation can also signal that you're excited about something, that it's something that you want in your future, and that you should go after it.
Okay, I'm looking at a stress under relevant emotions, and stress affects men and women differently. How so?
Yeah, so in stressful situations, research has shown that women tend to make low-risk decisions, whereas men will take the higher-risk option. So men just want to rush in and do something when they're stressed, whereas women are more likely to say, let's calm down, let's really think through all our options. Mm-hmm. And that's actually why it's so important to have both genders on a team, because they can balance each other out and make sure that the team actually picks the best decision.
All right. We'll talk a little bit about teams and how that come to play in just a moment. I'm here with Liz Fosleen, co-author of the book No Hard Feelings. Stay tuned to Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Race Again. Good morning. This is Frida Liu. If you've just joined us, I'm here with Liz Fosleen, co-author of the book No Hard Feelings, Emotions at Work, a book she's written with Molly West Duffy. And it's a really practical book. I'm looking through it. And one of the things that we cover on is in teams, in the workplace. Now, what comes into play when you talk about teams, and how does that affect our emotions?
Yeah, so there was a big study at Google a few years ago, and they set out to see what kind of people, when you put them together, form the best team. So they were like, should it all be introverts? Should it be really senior-ranked people? Do they need to be experts? And what they actually found is that it's not who's on the team that matters. It's how the team interacts with each other. Right. So the most important thing on a team that leads to innovation and success and good productivity is if members can communicate well. And so ways to do that are, when someone throws out an idea, instead of shooting it down immediately, thank them. Say, thanks for that idea. I'm really glad that we're all able to brainstorm. Another really critical thing on a team is to be able to admit mistakes. So if you don't feel safe flagging an issue, you're not going to raise that issue. And then it's going to just sit there and become a huge issue that actually might cause your team to fail. So it's critical that people are able to say in a team setting, hey, I'm actually not sure that I'm doing this right. Can someone come look over my work? And again, a little way of doing that, of encouraging that behavior, is when someone admits a mistake, don't punish them immediately. Don't make them feel bad. Just say, you know, I'm really grateful that you flagged this. It's very important as a team that we're able to surface issues before they become too big for us to handle.
Right. But what if you're already at it with an issue and there is conflict already, you've come to a gridlock, what do you do then? How do you dissect that situation?
Yeah, so the first thing about conflict is to always make sure to keep it about the task and not the person. So an example of that is, Molly and I, when we were writing, we have slightly different writing styles. So Molly can just write a ton of words, and I'm much more, it takes me longer to write something, but I'm much more concise, and I love to edit sentences. And so when we had issues, we would always focus it on the writing. And then I would say, I think that this is kind of the better way to do it because X, Y, Z, but I never, ever made the conflict about Molly or her personality. So we always made sure to never make generalizations about the other person's character. So, for example, if I had said, instead of, hey, I think paragraph 3 should be deleted, if I had said, you always write too much, those are two very different statements. And the second, you always write too much, is actually when conflict becomes toxic and the team's productivity and success starts to go down the drain.
Okay. There's this bit about jerks, dissenters, and slackers, right? How do you deal with each? What kind of behavior do they display?
Yes. So a jerk is just someone who's mean, who is unnecessarily cruel, shoots people down. And one of the best things to do there is to distance yourself. So if you can physically distance yourself, move to a different desk, that's great. But another key thing is just make sure not to be so vulnerable around that person, mm-hmm. because jerks will take what you tell them and use it against you later. So those are two tips to dealing with jerks. If you're a manager, you have to contain the jerk. And that ultimately, it might start with, hey, you know, you're acting in this way and it's having a really bad effect on your teammates. Can we talk about ways that you might feel happier on the team, or what can we do, you know, to solve this issue? And if it doesn't go away, you have to get rid of them. It's so bad for teams to have a jerk among the team. It really tanks motivation and has all kinds of negative effects on the team. And then I'll quickly jump to dissenters. And so a dissenter is someone who's always poking holes in an idea but never offers a solution. Mm. So you come in, you're excited, and then they say, oh, this is why that won't work. And then they sit there and stare at you. I think we've all encountered this person. And one great rule, I was on a team once, and a rule that I loved they implemented was that you can always shoot down an idea. You have to do it nicely, but then you have to add colon and a suggestion. Right. So, well, for example, I could say, that idea won't work, but here's another way that we could try this. I think that's a nice productive twist.
Right. Well, the meeting's very quiet then.
No, I mean, it actually worked. I think there was less dissent because it forced people to have to come up with an alternative. And often then you realize, like, oh, this is actually a really hard problem.
All right, slackers.
Yeah, so slackers are the people that just don't do the work. Yeah. And so slacking becomes much easier as a team gets bigger. Mm. So if there's only two people working on a project, it's kind of easier to tell who's doing all the work than it is if there are 50 people working on a project. Mm. So one way is to just create duos. And a duo is it can be a really strong team. And it also surfaces who's actually sitting there doing the work. As a manager, it's also important to ask for feedback, to make sure that you're aware of who's doing the work, because you don't want to create a situation where it's incredibly demotivating to watch someone get credit for work that you did. So I would just encourage managers to be aware of those situations and then have a conversation with the slacker. Sometimes it's because there's something else going on in their life. And especially if it's a top performer that has suddenly started slacking, you should understand what's going on and try and help them if you can. But if it becomes chronic, again, you just have to take action as a manager so that it doesn't poison your team.
Right. Very interesting chapter in communication as well. Maybe I want to touch a little bit about digital miscommunication, because that's going to, you know, that's a big, big challenge for all of us all over the world.
Yes. It's so easy to inflame a situation over email without meaning to. So when we're writing, we're not able to see someone smiling or their tone of voice changing. And so there's all this critical information that just doesn't exist in an email. So we really encourage people in the book, emotionally proofread. And that is, before you send out an email, read through it and really put yourself in the recipient's shoes and try and understand how they're going to perceive the email. So for example, you're reviewing someone's memo and you have edits, if you just send them an email that says, let's talk, that's terrifying. But if you send them an email that says instead, hey, got the memo, overall think it looks great, I want to discuss a few things, let's meet tomorrow, right, that's very different. It might feel like you're over-communicating, but it's actually better to say more to ensure that you're not creating anxiety unnecessarily.
Right. It's such a simple thing, right? I've received those kind of emails, and let's talk gets me, you know, and really it's just let's talk, you know, but we read so much into it.
So much. And especially kind of the less you know someone and the higher they are in the ranking of an organization, the more that you're going to perceive the email as negative. So someone new emails you, let's talk, negative. If your boss emails you that, terrified. So really important to be aware of those dynamics as well.
Okay. Now you talk about culture in the book as well. And what are some of the key things from culture? And I guess culture isn't so much racial culture, but culture. Tell me more.
Yeah. So one of the first things when we talk about culture and how culture essentially boils down to how do you feel at work and how do you feel when you walk into a space. And it's so important to realize that emotions spread. They can go viral and they're contagious. So if you've ever sat next to someone who isn't saying anything, but they're hunched over their laptop, they're frantically typing, they're jiggling their leg, they're clearly anxious, you're going to start to feel anxiety too. Your heart rate will go up, and this has been clearly documented. We catch each other's feelings. So one of the best things you can do to create a healthy emotional culture is, one, just practice emotional self-care. Make sure you're taking the breaks you need so that you're not kind of spreading these negative emotions. Mm-hmm. And the second is, a big thing about emotional culture is that it's based on these small gestures and signals. So imagine an office you walk in and it's all white, there's nothing on anyone's desk. That feels very different than if you walk into an office and there's a birthday cake because they're celebrating someone's birthday and people have plants and pictures. So again, it's these small things that together create a big environment. And in the book, we just encourage people to create a healthy emotional environment. Say thank you. Include people in conversations. Grab coffee with someone that you don't know. Just generally exude kindness, and that will be returned to you, and that creates a healthy emotional culture.
Okay, I've just got about two questions on leadership, and one is, when women cut each other down, why do women do that, and how do you react to that?
Yeah, so usually this happens because women perceive that there's only room for one of them at the top, mm-hmm, and that it forces this kind of competition. So one of the best ways to stop this problem of women cutting each other down is just to provide equal advancement opportunities for both genders. Mm-hmm. And that's really when you see women flip and start to support each other. If you have a female coworker that you feel like is cutting you down, you can try having a conversation with her. Or you might just want to think about, well, how can I support her? Or how can I have like a larger conversation with my boss about maybe this is because at this organization there aren't equal advancement opportunities. So I think it's really hard as a woman when you have a female coworker and she's not supporting you. But often it's just indicative of like a larger structural issue.
Right. What is this whole concept on selective vulnerability?
Yeah. So as a leader, you should express some emotion. If you don't ever show emotion, people are going to see you as a robot, and no one trusts you if you're not, you know, affected by layoffs, affected by someone crying. You do need to show that you're empathetic. Mm. But you can't just be crying in the office every day because you're going to undermine your ability to lead. No one is going to trust you to create a direction for the team if you're completely overly emotionally expressive. Mm-hmm. And so in the book, we encourage leaders to practice selective vulnerability, and that is to speak about your emotions without getting emotional and then provide a path forward. So a way to do this is, let's say that the team has just been pulling really late hours, you're all extremely stressed about a deadline, and I'm the leader. I might say something like, hey, this has been a really hard week. I'm feeling it too. I'm tired. I know we've all been pulling long hours. That said, here's what I'm doing to ensure that we make this deadline. Here's what I need from you. And then once we make the deadline, we're going to have a small celebration. And so it's a really nice way of I feel the things that you feel, but also I've put a plan in place to make sure that we're going to get to where we need to go.
Right. So Liz, how can people get hold of you both and get hold of the book?
Yeah, so the book should be available in bookstores, online, anywhere that you purchase books. And then Molly and I have a lot of additional resources. So we have assessments where you can figure out if you feel belonging at your organization, what kind of emotional expression tendencies you have. Those are all on our website, which is Liz and Molly, Liz and then MOLLIE.com.
All right. Thanks for being with us. I really enjoyed our conversation. We've been talking about the book, No Hard Feelings, Emotions at Work, written by Liz Fosline and Molly West Duffy. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.